Blog Talk Radio.
The following program contains material which may be considered offensive to some listeners and outright disturbing to others. The views, opinions, positions, or strategies expressed in this program are solely the thought property of Art Underground, who accepts no liability for the content of this program or for the consequences of any actions taken on the basis of the information provided. This program will contain strong language, pervasive writing, thematic elements, mild pervitude, and general insanity. Listening to the program may or may not induce and or cause headaches, migraines, difficulty breathing, bleeding of the nose, mild antisocial personality disorder, failing faith in humanity syndrome, temporary blindness, sudden panic attacks, confusion, rapid pulse, dizziness, hissy fits, loss of appetite, and may even induce fits of rage. And while listener discretion is advised, the host is apathetic, unconcerned, and uninterested with any of the above problems that you may experience. We simply could not give less of a shit if we tried to. Enjoy!
There's a storm coming. Are you ready? Are you prepared? You damn well better be. This storm here, she ain't nothing like you've ever seen before. So grab hold of your bootstraps and hold on tight. This is gonna be one bumpy damn ride.
Good evening and welcome, everybody. Good evening, everyone, and welcome. I'm Art Underground. This is American Renegade. Hey, it all happens to the best of us. It's April 22nd, 2020. It is all Wednesday, halfway through the week. And it just keeps getting more and more interesting as the days go by. Let me see. Anything I want to mention before we go forward? Let me see here. Something I want to get into probably maybe tomorrow. I was reading an article. I haven't had a chance to finish it, but apparently a Hennick shooter maker, PhD. She's a doctor, scientist, and researcher. She's actually part of a team trying to develop a COVID-19 vaccine. And it's kind of an interesting article. So that may be something that's on the maybe in the works for tomorrow. Something we'll be getting into here very shortly is the issue of reopening the economy and what's happening here. I can only speak to what's happening here in Georgia because, well, I don't live in any other states, so I'm aware of the protests in Michigan and I believe Idaho and other states. But I try, with respects to this kind of issue, I try to stay focused more on the state of Georgia because that's where I live. But if you happen to be in one of these states where people are protesting, we'd definitely like to hear from you. There's been some comment within from some of the experts that in light of Anthony Fauci, a week and a half ago. 2 weeks, whatever it was, when he was touting the idea of a Wuhan virus immunity card. Some experts are now saying that that's because of people who are asymptomatic and people who have not yet been exposed. That's probably not a realistic approach, because if you're only going to let people move about who can prove that they've had the virus and therefore have immunities or antibodies to it, then you're going to be leaving an awful lot of people still locked up in homes. There was something we might get into tomorrow, or sometime in the next couple of days, is an approach that maybe you should be taking or should not be taking with respect to the foods and stuff in the grocery stores. I have my views and opinions on that. But if we have time later this evening and I think of it, maybe I'll even get into that this evening if I have time and no one calls in later in the broadcast. Also, please try to wait until I give the word. If I have time to take calls, I'll let you know. Also, you can connect with me at 1, the number 1, that is, 1AmericanRenegade@gmail.com. And you can connect on Skype, and that would be American Renegade, two words. Look for the red and white stripe and the rattlesnake, and that'll be me. So I've talked briefly a couple days ago, I believe it was Sunday, I think it was, about Harvard receiving $9 million of stimulus money. And we'll get to colleges here in just a minute, but I want to talk a little bit about college students. An article today in USA Today reads as follows. When the federal government announced it would distribute nearly $6.3 billion to colleges to give to students in need, the aid was met with fanfare. The Education Department said on April 9th that the coronavirus money was on its way. For nearly every student, the money still has yet to arrive. Now, on Tuesday, the Education Department specified that a huge group of students would not be eligible at all. For instance, students who are ineligible for federal student aid cannot get this money. So if you're a college student, you don't qualify for any kind of financial aid, maybe because your family has too much money or whatever the case is, you're not eligible for federal student aid. You are not eligible to receive any of the stimulus money. This also includes undocumented students, international students, or what they call exchange students, I guess, and also recipients of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA. If you are in that group, you don't qualify. Now, some eligible students don't even know that the money is supposed to be available to them. For example, Alicia Wheely, 22 years old. She is in her final year studying photography at the University of South Carolina. And for the past few weeks, she's had this very precarious feeling. She normally works two part-time jobs, one at a local vintage thrift store and the other as a manager of a photography lab at the university. And she's not been able to work at either of these jobs for nearly 2 months now, and she's worried about the ability to buy groceries. She's behind on her rent. Of course, her landlord is giving her more time to pay, but if she can't work, I see Vopal Bite in the chat room, welcome. But if she can't work, then how is she going to even pay the rent later on, even though he's giving her more time? If she can't buy groceries, how can she buy rent? Her tax refund's not yet come in, and she was not eligible for the stimulus checks made available through the CARE Act. She also said she's looking to receive some aid from the university, which is tied to her job, but she hasn't seen that money either. So, she says, people keep saying, here is all this money, but it's not being given out. And now she feels the same way about this new round of federal money, well, it would kind of help, but she said she's not even sure if she's going to be eligible for any of that. Now, Jeffrey Stenslin, who is a spokesperson for the University of South Carolina, said that the university has developed a method to distribute the money to students, and officials were eager to start communicating that to the students, but so far the students haven't heard anything. Stenslin said, quote, "We were advised not to even offer specific details prior to those being issued. Please know that we're doing all we can to address the multitude of questions and concerns of the students and family." But meanwhile, Willie says she's going to wait. She says, "We'll get through it. I've had times before when I haven't had money." But see, the problem here is colleges have been wary about distributing the money because they have a fear of running afoul of future guidance from the federal government. This, according to Justice Drager, CEO of the National Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators. And he says there were questions of which students were eligible and just how the funds could be used, but colleges need to be assured that they're not going to be penalized for how they give out the money going forward. In many respects, I really don't blame them. Now, I want to go back to the conversation of the universities. Now, remember a few days ago I mentioned how Harvard University, which has a $41 billion a year endowment, somehow received $9 million in funding under the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, the CARES Act. Funny how, you know, the universities can get all of this money, but the students can't seem to get any of it. Now, Josh Hawley, Republican of Missouri, wrote on Twitter, "Why is Harvard, with its multi-billion-dollar endowment, much of it built with help from taxpayer money, getting a bailout? This is obscene." Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, Republican, on Twitter, "Taxpayer relief funds should go to those in real need. Harvard University has a $41 billion endowment, the largest in the world. Put another way, Harvard's endowment is $13 million per student, or $171 million per faculty member." Now, Harvard is actually allocating 100% of the funds to financial assistance for students to meet their urgent needs in the face of this pandemic, according to Jason Newton, Associate Director of Harvard's Media Relations. He added, "Harvard will allocate the funds based on student financial need." Now, to be sure, the $2 trillion CARES Act included $14 billion in its Higher Education Emergency Relief Fund, which is separate from the Payroll Protection Program administered through the Small Business Administration through local banks. Now, this law allocates funds to all the colleges that participate in the federal student aid program. And relief packages were determined through a funding formula based largely on the number of students at an institution receiving federal financial aid through Pell Grants and the overall institutional student enrollment. Now, President Trump said yesterday, that Harvard University would be returning all coronavirus stimulus money that was intended for small businesses. That's that $9 million that they got. Well, Harvard is supposedly going to return all of that money, and added that he would ask other large entities to do so as well. Well, I would add to that, Mr. Trump, to make sure you include your two sons who are asking for federal funds for that five-star Trump International Hotel in D.C. Yeah, that's right. Trump's two eldest sons, claiming that they want to be treated fairly as everyone else, and they want relief funding in light of the revenues that they've lost. Guys, seriously, you can afford to take the hit, okay? Now, some of the large fund packages, and I did have a little help finding this, so I'm not going to mention any names, but I want to thank my researchers for looking this up, because basically I said, I want to know who got what. Okay, here's what they found. Arizona State University, $63.5 million. Rutgers University, $54 million. Ohio State University, $42.8 million. Other schools that received big funding were San Diego State University, $29 million. San Francisco State University, $28 million. And New York University, $25 million. Among the Ivy League schools, of course, we know Harvard got $9 million, which they're supposedly giving back. But Columbia University, they got $13 million. The University of Pennsylvania got just shy of $10 million. And Yale University, which is the second largest endowment and universities in the United States, got $25.5 billion, receiving nearly $7 million though so far. So Harvard's endowment distributed about $1.9 billion at the end of the fiscal year 2019, contributing more than a third of the university's total operating revenue that year. So apparently the big colleges, buttloads of money, but the students are still left hanging in limbo. All right. So, been wanting to get to this for the past couple days now. And that is the issue of reopening the economy. And I'm going to focus primarily on Georgia because it's where I live. Now, I don't know exactly what's happening with any detail in your states because I'm not in your states. I'm not hearing your local news reports and such as that. The only news reports I'm getting are what's coming from my own state. So this is just something to think about going forward in your own states as this reopening of America's economy begins to take place. Governor Kemp just came out a few days ago and said he's lifting restrictions and allowing some businesses to open this Friday, and others will be able to begin opening up on Monday. Now, Georgia's timetable, which is one of the most aggressive in the nation, and this is why I want to focus on Georgia, because there really are no other states that are aggressively working to reopen the economy than Georgia. We don't screw around here in Georgia. When we do something, we go all out, or for the most part. And, of course, the mayors aren't happy about that, and we'll get to that in a minute. Georgia's Governor Kemp announced plans Monday to restart the state's economy before the end of the week, saying many businesses that were closed to mitigate the spread of the coronavirus could reopen as early as Friday. Now, Tennessee, which is our northern neighbor here, they plan to let businesses in most of their state begin opening as soon as next week. But Georgia's timetable, which is one of the most aggressive in the nation, is set to allow, as of Friday, gyms, hair salons, bowling alleys, and tattoo parlors to reopen as long as owners follow strict social distancing and hygiene requirements. Elective medical procedures could also possibly resume. And by Monday, movie theaters may resume selling tickets, and restaurants, which have been limited to takeout orders only, could return to limited dine-in services. Now, such a swift reopening runs counter to the advice of many experts I know, including Dr. Anthony Fauci, the government's top authority on infectious diseases, who warned again just this past Monday that resuming business too soon risks a fresh spike in infections. Now, Republican Governor Brian Kemp said it was important to allow businesses that had been shut down a chance to get some revenue flowing. But he emphasized that businesses would still be operating under restrictions, including monitoring employee health, enhancing sanitation, and separating workers. Quote, I think this is the right approach at this time, and this is the right time to do it. We're not just throwing the keys back to the business owners. We're talking about people who had the government shut down their businesses. Of course, bars, nightclubs, and live performance venues will continue to be remain closed. Here is my question, though. How are, I mean, I get in gyms, yeah, you might can do that social distancing thing. And God, you know, that sounds so retarded, social distancing. You know, where I come from, we just say, keep a, you know, keep 6 foot space between the two of you. That's how we say it where I come from. But okay, well, it is what it is. I can see, you know, gyms and maybe even bowling alleys for that matter, being able to maintain this social distancing. But how do you do social distancing in hair salons, nail salons, tattoo parlors? And think about this, tattoo parlors, you know, they're dealing with, yeah, you have OSHA regulation. I know this because my niece used to do tattoos, so I know the regulations and the rules that she had to follow. And, you know, tattoo artists, they deal with blood, okay? Yeah, they wear gloves and this, and that, and the other. But, you know, they have people coming in with, you know, hep A, hep B, hep C. They have people coming in to get tattoos that have AIDS, HIV, and, you know, just all kinds of other weird stuff going on. So now they have this coronavirus thing they got to worry about. How do you social distance? I just don't get how that's going to work with tattoo parlors, hair salons, nail salons, and such as that. But, hey, you know what? It is what it is. Meanwhile, we've got Stacey Abrams, who just was all over Governor Kemp about this reopening, this slow approach to reopening this week and going into next week, saying there's nothing about this that makes sense, quote, unquote. Quote, there's nothing about this that makes sense. The mayors of Atlanta, Albany, and Savannah have all questioned the wisdom of doing this, and the fact is the governor didn't consult with mayors before making this decision. Well, see, here's the thing. The governor doesn't have to consult with mayors before making any decision. He's the governor of the state, and he has the authority granted him by the Constitution to do various things. So, like it or not, it ain't up to you guys. All right? It's his call. I happen to agree with it. Now, some will say, well, Art, none of this has had any effect on your lifestyle and what you do from day to day. And you're right, it hasn't. There is absolutely nothing about this closure or these stay-at-home procedures or stay-at-home policies. None of the lockdown or any of that has had any effect on my life whatsoever. Because virtually everything I do right here at home. I have been doing it this way for years, for over 10 years now. So nothing about my life has changed except I couldn't go into town, sit at my local coffee shop, my favorite local coffee shop, and have coffee and flirt with the waitresses. That's the only thing I've not been able to do. Everything else in my life I've been able to do. So it's not had any effect on me. So why should I care? I care because these are my friends, my neighbors, people I care about. This is my community. This is my town. This is my county. It's my state. So I care. I care about all the people that live in Georgia, regardless of political affiliation. So I happen to agree with Governor Kemp. Now, we have the mayor of Atlanta, which is Georgia's biggest city, saying that Kemp's decision is not based on anything logical. Keisha Lance Bottoms, Democrat, says, "We see our numbers are continuing to tick up in this state. We see that our deaths are rising. We have some of the highest asthma rates in the country right here in Atlanta." Van Johnson, mayor of Savannah, reckless, premature, and dangerous. He told, that was what he called this. He told CNN, "People can see it for themselves. We want them to keep the faith, but we want them to follow the science. This is still a dangerous time. This is not the time for people to take their feet off the gas." Oh, wait a minute. No, you want people to put their foot on the brakes because you want everything to come to a screeching halt. Okay? But there are many mayors around the country, or around in the state of Georgia, saying the same thing. Mayor Bo Duro in Albany, where nearly 100 people have died, says, "I'm flabbergasted that the governor would say we can't take additional precautions to protect our citizens. This isn't a mixed signal. It's a U-turn." Interestingly enough, these are all Democrats. And as far as Stacey Abrams, remember, this is that same idiot who said, you know, she was running for governor here in Georgia, and she had the nerve to say it's sad when you have to resort to farming to make a living. Yeah, as if anything you've got to say, Miss Abrams, means anything to me. You're another one of those that I would recommend you go find a deep, dark hole, crawl in it, and bury yourself. Because you got nothing to say that I or any logical individual cares to hear. As Governor Kemp says, the people of Georgia have learned, and there is a smart way to do this. And I agree. And I think we can begin to open our economy back up. We take it slow, we take it easy, we don't rush things, we go a little bit at a time, and we get it done. Now, the governor has defended his plan to reopen some of the businesses like gyms, hair salons, and such as that, and restaurants and movie theaters next week, saying, "We are taking a measured step. I would urge people to really look at the guidance that we're going to be putting out for the rest of the week. This is going to take some common sense, what our people have learned." Kemp's controversial move, which he referred to as the gateways to phase one of the president's plan, was made in conjunction with public health officials and is based on the data collected here in Georgia. Quote, "They support a measured opening, which is what we are doing. It's going to be very limited in scope, and it will be limited to basic operations." Now, he did express concerns about civil repercussions and the development of mental health issues among business owners if their establishments were to remain shut down indefinitely. And this has been the big conversation that's been going around, not just on the state level, but here on the county level as well. People are going stir crazy. People are getting restless. People are finding themselves on the edge, not sure how much more of this they can take, not understanding why they can't go back to work, considering the fact that health officials are telling us that we have seen a plateauing of cases here in the state of Georgia, meaning we have leveled out and are beginning the downward trajectory. that also supports the argument that this cannot continue indefinitely. At some point, something's got to break. And we either break the lockdown and start a slow return back to work, rebuilding our economy, or we break and basically go mentally off the chain. If you don't think for one second that this is not, and I see Bringing It Boy in the chat room, welcome. And if we don't start getting back to work, mental health is going to become a major issue. It's already having an impact on people. I see it when I talk to people. People that I've known since I was a child, who have always been calm, steady, and in control, are now shaking and trembling, unsure, panicking. That's not a good thing. So when Governor Kemp says he is concerned about the mental health of people in the state of Georgia if we don't get back to work, he's absolutely right. But it's not just here in Georgia. This is nationwide. People have got to get back to work. We cannot continue doing this. We simply can't do it. Okay, so what are the experts, the economic experts, what are they saying at this point? Well, according to Michael McGrail, as the coronavirus pandemic keeps America's retail stores closed, Michael McGrail is gearing up for what is shaping to be a busy summer of running, going out of business sales at some very prominent chains. Now, Michael McGrail is the CEO of one of the world's largest asset dispositions and valuation firms, known as Tiger Capital Group. It is McGrail's team that often includes store associates of a stricken retailer that hangs up the everything must go sign and works to fetch top dollars on fixtures and other inventory. He says some companies are just not going to survive this. He's declined to say exactly which retailers have been calling him up for asset appraisals, except to note that the names wouldn't be any big shock to anyone. Now, such is the current life for McGrail and others in the retail, bankruptcy, and restructuring fields. In talking to a host of experts, one thing is abundantly clear. There is a thunderstorm of bankruptcies in retail that are about to rain down on Wall Street as a result of the aftershocks of this crisis. Once formidable retailers, they say, will either vanish entirely or emerge from bankruptcy with 75% smaller store networks. Those retailers that somehow managed to avoid bankruptcy by way of a creative debt raise or other restructuring will find the road ahead bumpy. Ooh, I got a weird beep beep on my. Did I just lose my connection? No, okay, I got my sound check. I heard a weird clink on my computer. That was odd. That's not something I hear very often. That was strange. But, you know, so this is going to be ugly. Now, we haven't seen a strong uptick in bankruptcies. Only four so far this year, according to BDO data, and they would be Papyrus, Model Sporting Goods, Pier 1 Imports, and True Religion. JCPenney would be one of the higher profile names we think could be closest to a bankruptcy situation, according to Veteran Retail Analysis, when discussing this issue. This is not good. Also, we need to keep in mind, here we're talking about major corporations. We're talking about nationwide and international chains. We haven't even begun to talk about the small independent mom and pops. For example, we have a local restaurant here. It's owned by a husband and wife team. They only have the one restaurant. That's it. Nothing else. And they're looking at going belly up. They're not sure that they're going to be able to reopen because they've lost so much money. We have small clothing shops, mom and pops. It's just the one store dealing with a very limited line of clothing and shoes and such as that, talking about they may not be able to reopen. They may be going belly up. These are going to be the hardest hit as a result of this. So this isn't just impacting the big, you know, Fortune 500 national and international chains. The real damage is going to be to the small independent mom and pops. And that's what I'm worried about. In the chat room, I hear the government is out of money. How can socialism start if there's no money, since there are a group of Americans who want capitalism to be no more? Yeah, very good point. And here's the thing, you know, who was it? Margaret Thatcher, I believe it was, that said the problem with socialism is that eventually you run out of other people's money. Well, here's the thing. With the $4 trillion bailout to the banks and the feds to buy up bearer bonds and corporate bonds and such things as that, combine that with the $2.2 trillion relief package of the CARE package that they passed last, a week and a half ago, and within just a few days it was gone. It was tapped out, $349 billion. So they had to do another $500 billion package, which is already on the way out the door and set to be running out of money in like a week. And they've got two more packages on the table right now that they're trying to work out. And we got people like Alexander, you know, AOC, talking about, well, if there isn't money in there for illegal immigrants and for this and for that and for the other thing, I'll vote no. They're already running out of other people's money. In fact, there is no other people's money at this point. Think about it. All the revenue that has been lost just in the past few months since all this started, it's all gone. The coffers are now empty. Remember, the Fed told the banks, don't worry about that 10% rule. Go ahead and make the loan. So they're making loans when they don't have any money. They're just printing digits on a computer server. This is insane. Absolutely insane. And if that ain't bad enough, experts are now saying that it may be time for grocery stores before – I'm not even going to finish that. I want to say this first. Do you remember – what was it? Last week, I believe it was. me telling you, I love to tell you about the story. I love to tell you the stories of when I go to town and I talk to people and such as that, because I think by sharing my own personal experiences of the conversations I have with people and what people tell me and what I hear people talking about and such as that, I think by sharing those stories, I think it gives a real perspective on a personal level, not coming from a corporate spokeshole or some jackass from the mainstream media or some idiot like Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, or whatever that's worth millions. I think a guy like me who just gives you the stories of a tiny little country town, less than 10,000 people, those stories have impact. I honestly believe that. And it was last week, on one of the broadcasts last week, I talked about how I had been telling people when they want to know why I laugh at people with masks and this and that and the other. And I tell them, well, you put on your mask and then you walk through the store. I don't see you with a bottle of sanitizer and a handy wipe, spraying everything and wiping it all down before you touch it. You pick things up off the shelf and you handle them with bare hands. And then you put them down and you continue on. And then when you get out to the car, the first thing you do is you pull that mask off and then you wipe your face with your bare hand. And now everything that you just touched in that store is now all over your face, including what you picked up off of doorknobs or whatever else you might have touched along the way. And this is how stupid people are. I'm going to be safe. I'm going to wear a mask. Yeah. And then you're going to rub it all over your face when you take the mask off. And somebody said, well, I don't see any other way around it. And my comment was, well, yeah, you could walk around with a little spritzer bottle and a handy wipe and spray and wipe everything down before you touch it. Or could just close down the damn stores. And then what do? Everything is delivered. But then the problem with that is you don't know who handled all of your stuff as they were packing your boxes to deliver it to your house. You don't know where they've been, who they've come in contact with. This whole concept of, have you come in contact with anyone who's been exposed to COVID-19 in the past 14 days? How the hell am I supposed to know? I don't know who they've come in contact with over the past 14 days. Hell, I don't even know them. I don't know who touched that box of cereal and who they've come in contact with over the past 14 days. I don't know who touched the doorknob of that door and who they've come in contact over the past 14 days. How the hell can I tell you if I've been exposed to anybody who's come in contact? That's kind of a stupid question, don't you think? Well, lo and behold, not long after I said that, within just a few days, bing, bang, boom, article comes out on Sunday, April 19th. Experts say it might be time for grocery stores to ban customers from coming inside because of the COVID-19 virus. Within just a couple days after I made the comment about the only way to ensure would be to close the stores and have everything done by delivery. But again, you don't know who's packing your boxes. You don't know who's going through the store collecting your groceries and packing your boxes. You don't know the people that are delivering it to your home, who they've come in contact with. So again, where does this make any sense? How does this make me feel any safer? Thank God in heaven, and I'm not a religious man, but thank God I have 2 years worth of food. 4 years worth of seed and crops that come back year after year without me having to ever do anything. Traps so I can trap, the ability to hunt and fish and provide my own food. Thank heaven I don't have to worry about grocery stores, because if I did, I would not feel very safe right about now. It is crazy. just absolutely crazy. They want to close down the grocery stores. Something else I wanted to touch on, hopefully I can get to the rest of this in the next 15 minutes. I've tried not to get in a hurry because I've tried not to get in a hurry tonight because I really, I usually, and Robert, Suzette, you guys in the chat room, you know that usually I talk really fast because I'm trying to cram massive amounts of information into an hour, except on Sunday where I can slow down a little bit because I have 3 hours. But I didn't want to push it tonight because I feel the need to really just kind of slow down a little bit and take a breath. Seriously. We don't have a McDonald's here in my town or in the next town over. In fact, we don't have any. In fact, I've got to go two counties over before I see a McDonald's, and thank God, because that's not even real food. But there was a letter to the editor in the Los Angeles Times earlier this month on April 9th, how paying rent now is like being stuck in a rigged game of Monopoly. Imagine playing Monopoly and being told you're not allowed to take a turn while being stuck on the other player's property. Meanwhile, the other player is allowed to keep playing and demand rent for every turn you're ordered to stay on that space. Okay, well, you want to compare it to Monopoly? All right. Heaven forbid if you land on Boardwalk or Park Place and it's got a motel on it. You're kind of screwed if you don't own several properties and have some kind of revenue coming in. But even if you end on Reading Railroad or you end on Pennsylvania Avenue, it doesn't matter what it is. If you don't have enough in your coffers to pay the rent, what do? You sell property, right? So here's my argument. If you want to compare it to Monopoly, then let me ask you this. Let's say, for example, I own two or three houses. I don't have a job. My only income is what I take in from renting out these three houses. That's my income. That is my livelihood. I am a landlord. That's all I do. I'm responsible for maintenance of the houses and such as this. Now, if you're not paying the rent, I have no revenue. If I have no revenue, I can't do upkeep on the houses. If I can't do upkeep on the houses, they become run down and dilapidated. See, I know how this works because as I was growing up, my mom owned several houses and she rented them out. So I know how I know how this works. I know how real estate works. I grew up in it. I had a very fortunate childhood. I grew up surrounded by landlords and landladies and real estate agents and bankers and lawyers and judges and movie stars and sports celebrities and on and on and on. My dad was a 32nd degree Mason and my mom was a lady Mason and my dad was a member of the Shriners and the JCs and my mom was a member of the, my mom and dad were members of the Rotary Club. And yeah, you get the idea. I grew up in this environment, which is why I detest these very people. I never allowed myself to get caught up in that world. I detest those people. I love my mom and dad, but everybody else, I couldn't stand them. So if I can't collect my rent, I can't fix the houses. If I can't fix the houses, they run down. If the houses run down, have you ever been to the hood? Have you ever drove through the ghetto? And I'm not talking about the ghetto with apartment buildings that's got 100 apartments in one big building. I'm talking about the ghetto where you drive down the street. It's house after house after house after house, and they all look like they're about to fall down. That's what you end up with. And then I have a family I've got to take care of. So now I can't feed my family. Yeah, you see how this works? But then again, if you people were prepping, like many of us had told you to, buying silver when, you know, here and there, a couple ounces here and there, yeah, you know, but no, you didn't want to do that. You wanted to call us crazy. One final thing is NBC News had an article came out yesterday, or day before yesterday, talking about the poor people like Herminio Rodriguez couldn't send money to his family in Guatemala this month because the Miami Beach restaurant where he was working has been closed down for several weeks. You know what? I could give a rat's ass less about those people in Guatemala at this point. I don't care about the people in Venezuela or Guatemala or Cuba or Puerto Rico or any other country. I don't give a shit. I care about the United States and what's happening here. You people in other countries worry about yourself. And you little dirtbags want to come here illegally and take jobs away from born and bred Americans and then send money to your home country? Screw you. Screw you. You come here, you take jobs from Americans, and then you send that money to another country? I ain't trying to help your country. And instead of coming here talking about, I'm trying to escape poverty and blah, 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 blah. Well, you know what? If it's that bad in your home country, why didn't you just focus on trying to fix it instead of running away and coming here and then trying to drag your bullshit heritage, your bullshit here? You come here claiming to try to get away from crime and poverty and this and that and the other, and then you turn your own neighborhoods into the very shit that you left. It's kind of like you assholes from New York and other states. You move down here to the Deep South, and you bring your stupid-ass liberal bullshit with you and then start electing idiots like Stacey Abrams. You leave New York and states like that to get away from the taxes and all the crazy corruption, and you come down here and you turn around and elect the very same kind of people that caused the mess that caused you to leave to start with. Screw you, too. I like your moxie. In the chat room, I like your moxie. I'm not even sure what moxie is, but I think that's a compliment. I like to do the hat game. I pay what slip I draw out of the hat, and if your name comes up that week, then you get your money. That's funny. That is funny. See, my Skype just went bleepy bleep on me again. I don't know what's going on there, but it's weird. I don't know if that's somebody trying to tag me on Skype or whatever that damn deal is. Looking at my list here. Nope, it doesn't show anybody trying to tag me, so I don't know. I don't know. But it's not really that big of an issue. Okay, again. Now that that's all done and out of the way, every Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern, that's 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, American Renegade with Art Underground on Spreaker.com/user/Ideas Are Bulletproof Radio. Go to podcast. Click on the green t-shirt. That's me. Every Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. On Tuesdays, Suzette Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. On Thursday, RZ's Thursday Tune Show, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And on Saturday, RZ's Saturday Free Speech Zone, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. All of that on Spreaker.com/user/ideas are bulletproof radio. So there's no shortage of information to be had, except on Thursday, which is just RZ playing some music for your enjoyment, kind of like maybe to help you kind of take your mind in another direction so you can not think about all the stupid. Anyway, Spreaker.com/user/ideas are bulletproof radio. I want to thank everyone for joining me this evening. Thanks for tuning in. Hope it's been insightful and informative. As always, please take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, no matter what they say, no matter what they do, no matter how hard they work to intimidate you, don't ever be afraid to stand up, speak out, and let your voice be heard. Till next time, I'm Art Underground for American Renegade. Be safe out there.
You're gonna make it, you're free.